Oh well, taste is always a mystery, and never more so than with children. At one point when my kids were very young and particularly unfathomable, they couldn't get enough of a series of books based on the Disney Winnie the Pooh movies. These were clumsily written, banal little stories about being nice to your friends, taking care of the environment, celebrating differences. The 21st century middle-class version of Serve God, I Hate Lies. The illustrations, ham-handed takeoffs on Disney's already watered-down versions of E.H. Shepherd's original illustrations, were hopeless. And is there any cultural artifact more dispiriting than a shoddy children's book? Less stories than licensing deals, these were a cheap corporate product in the guise of something nourishing. Eventually, I got fed up with reading them over and over and decided to force the kids to listen to the original A.A. Milne books, which I found charming and droll. And they, shrugging off the whimsy and irony, found only, okay, their go-to adjective in those days when damning with faint praise. But then in the final chapter of the House at Pooh Corner came this curveball. Christopher Robin was going away. Nobody knew why he was going. Nobody knew where he was going. Indeed, nobody knew why he knew that Christopher Robin was going away. But somehow or other, everyone in the forest felt that it was happening at last. Milne never explains precisely what is going on here, but I take it to mean that Christopher Robin is being shipped off to a boarding school, or maybe some heartless parent or governess has told him that he is getting too old and too grown up to be talking to stuffed animals. Whatever the reason for his leaving, the crux of the story is that Christopher Robin has to break the bad news to Pooh. They go off together in the 100-acre wood, discussing the special joys of doing nothing. They keep walking and talking about this and that, and you start to get the feeling that Christopher Robin is stalling for time, putting off the painful inevitable. Finally, from out of nowhere, he blurts, "I'm not going to do nothing anymore." "Never again?" asks Pooh. "Well, not so much. They don't let you." Pooh, the bear of little brain, doesn't quite understand that. Well, Christopher Robin is breaking up with him. He has only an inchoate sense that his world is changing, and not for the better. And poor Christopher Robin, like so many males in this position, he can't quite get the words out, stammering like a Hugh Grant character. It's a wrenching scene in its way. Pooh's uncomprehensive innocence makes it feel nearly cruel. As I read aloud, I couldn't help weeping. It's a story, of course, about leaving childhood behind, which for poor, baffled Pooh, the one being left, the one who really exists only in Christopher Robin's imagination, is a kind of death. I naturally thought about my own kids growing up, which for a parent is another kind of death, or more to the point, an intimation of one's own. Isn't it ourselves we really are mourning when we say, "Oh, they grow up so fast"? All this was swirling through my head as I read, tears spilling down my face, and my heartless kids couldn't have cared less. They were just glad the book, which they had endured to humor me, was almost over. I tried to explain what was going on between Pooh and Christopher Robin and why they moved me. But my kids already understood it fine. They just didn't find it particularly sad. I guess they were used to abandoning toys and getting on with the next phase in life. But forget them. I had been moved and provoked when I might have least expected it, reading The House at Pooh Corner. You know, I have said for years that I envy my colleagues who work in the children's area of the library, be that library a public or a school library. They get to read and share and talk about some of the grooviest literature around, books written for kids. So I'm delighted to introduce you to today's feature title, Wild Things, The Joy of Reading Children's Literature as an Adult. A book that no less than the Wall Street Journal says is, quote, a charming discursive encounter with classic children's literature from the perspective of a parent. And the New York Times calls, quote, relaxed, discursive, and personal. The author's got a magpie's eye for odd and shiny details, end quote. Yes, the writing in Wild Things is as charming and thought-filled as any good children's storybook, not the least because our author has been reading and writing about Kitty Litt for many years. As a journalist, he writes for Vanity Fair, the New York Times Magazine, the New Yorker, and, as we heard, as a parent himself. True, as author Bruce Handy himself tells us early in his book, he cannot cover every favorite book that's been published, much less every favorite child's book in his reading life. So he's narrowed down his list to a doable 10, going on to slyly cite many other children's books and authors in each essay, so that what we get is a really fun smorgasbord of books as we move from chapter to chapter to chapter. For instance, the chapter ostensibly about Maurice Sendak, author of Where the Wild Things Are, in a not-so-subtle source of the book's title, Wild Things, offers us entry into the essay through a romping look at fairy tales that muses first about a crowd that includes the fairy tale collectors, the Brothers Grimm, Charles Perrault, and adds as well a cameo appearance by writers as diverse as Charles Dickens, Hans Christian Andersen, C.S. Lewis, and of course, J.K. Rowling. Oh, and then there is Maurice Sendak. Well, does this melange of books and writers work for the reader? Indeed it does. I think this approach really does work, bringing memories of tales old and new to our attention in engaging and surprising ways. For instance, Handy turns our attention early on to that classic Goodnight Moon, a classic of modern preschool storytime reading in the home and the library. It is a comfortingly wise and warm look at a book. And as we read further into the essay, it returns us to a story of a quiet evening unfolding through the eyes of a young child and segues us gently into the life of the author, Margaret Wise Brown, whose own life's ups and downs are woven into the one book of over 60 that she wrote that lives on long after the others have faded. Our fourth essay, cunningly presented as Chapter 4, takes up the very adult question, because kids just get it, of why talking animals? It's titled, Why a Duck? Taking us into the world of Aesop's Fables, the story of Beatrix Potter, and the modern adventures of Livia the Pig, a multicultural, multi-century trip through children's lit. We tour through many other years and topics of Kitty Lit too, and as we near the end of this delightful read, we end up going on 17, or not, where Handy explores with us the teenage, or not, years of characters made famous and endearing by Mark Twain, by Louisa May Alcott, about Peter Pan, and more. But wait, there is one more chapter and topic that Handy takes up with us, aptly titled Dead Pets, Dead Grandparents, and the End of Everything. One final note, I'm glad to say that Wild Things has made it to the NPR Concierge list of best books for 2017. So take my word for it, and the word of NPR, and give Wild Things a whirl in your stack of books to read this year. I think you're going to really enjoy it. I'm going to finish as our author finishes in his afterword when he's writing about, once again, his kids, their love for reading, his love for reading, and how it's made all of their lives richer because of reading children's books. As he writes, I hope, we were all held rapt by whatever I was reading aloud. For me, aside from the immediate pleasures of sharing great stories and art with my children, these nightly readings gave me a chance not only to reconnect with books I had loved as a boy, but also to discover the great wealth of children's literature published in the decades since I moved on to more mature works. I remember when Zoe, the older of my two children by 2 years, announced to me that she didn't want to be read to anymore, that she was now old enough to read herself to sleep. She was 9 or so. I think I felt a bit like Pooh being left behind by Christopher Robin. Parent is childish thing, perhaps, though the irony didn't soften the sting. Maybe a queer look came over my face, like the one that came over John Arable's when Fern challenged his sense of justice and stood up for Wilbur. But I didn't begrudge Zoe this stirring of independence. I'm certain I was absolutely 100% gracious about it, and not at all sniffy. I'm certain. At the time, the kids still shared a room in bunk beds, and one evening not long afterward, I was reading aloud to my younger son, Isaac. He was tucked into the lower bunk, while Zoe snuggled with her own book up top. I was sitting in the now fraying wicker-backed rocking chair we'd been given just for this purpose. I wish I could remember the specific title Isaac and I were reading. I think it was one of Beverly Cleary's. Halfway through the chapter, I heard slow, deep, gentle breaths coming from the upper bunk. Zoe's eyes had shut. Her book was splayed across her chest. Isaac soon fell asleep as well, his bed the usual chaotic, cocooning-like snarl of blanket, sheet, pillow, and limbs. Me? I was disappointed. I wanted to know what happened next in the book. I could have gotten up, but is there any sound more enchanting than that of sleeping children? So I stayed put in the rocking chair. I kept reading. It's a delightful look. It's a delightful trip down memory lane, if you will. Wild Things, The Joy of Reading Children's Literature as an Adult by Bruce Handy. It's available at all of our fine local libraries, including the West Lafayette Public Library.